This is Digital Story Podcast number 675, February 19th, 2019. Today's theme is Canon EOS RP, Mirrorless Rebel or Modern 5D. I'm Derek Story. The ground is still shaking from Canon's announcement of a full-frame mirrorless camera for $1,300. Are they bringing their successful Rebel strategy to the mirrorless space? Or is this something more? Also this week, a follow-up and correction to last week's show on copyright protection. All of this and more on today's TVS Photography Podcast. Alrighty, so we have so much to do this week. I'm going to make sure we stay within our half an hour best I can. I'm going to start out with discussing the Canon EOS RP. It's a very exciting announcement from Canon in terms of what you get for how much you have to pay. And we'll try to figure out where it fits in the whole landscape of mirrorless photography. And then the second story, I'm going to do a portfolio box tip of the week and announce the winner of our close-up photography challenge. That winner gets a one-year Portfolio Box Pro upgrade. That's pretty exciting. And then the third story, I'm going to go back and revisit our discussion from last week with Maggie Hallahan about copyright protection for photographers. We got some great letters from our viewership, and they basically said a few things need to be updated and corrected, and I'm going to cover that in the third story. So if you're interested in copyright protection for your images, make sure you tune in to that segment as well. Alrighty. All right. Right now, let's get to the Canon EOS RP Mirrorless Rebel or Modern 5D. Now, the reason why I frame it this way is because, you know, for years, Canon had this brilliant marketing strategy with the Rebel series. And what I liked about it was that they were able to deliver their latest technology to consumers in an affordable package. Now, that package wasn't as durable or rugged or weather sealed or any of that as the Pro bodies, but if you didn't need something that was going to be able to survive the Antarctica and you were more gentle with your gear and you wanted the latest technology, you could get a Rebel for a pretty good price. And I thought it was just brilliant in the film days, and it was brilliant in the digital days. And I'm looking at this new announcement, the EOS RP, which is their full-frame mirrorless, the third one they've announced recently, and by far and away the most affordable. And I'm going, is this the Rebel strategy coming back to us? And I started looking at it closer, and then I was going, but the spec is awfully good on this. You know, better than I remember seeing on Rebels, and I started to get more of the feeling like I got when I first heard about the Canon EOS 5D DSLR. And by the way, that was my first full-frame camera, the 5D. I shot with it at the Olympics in Beijing. I took it to Iceland on my first trip to Iceland. I mean, it was a fantastic camera, and it was also a breakthrough camera, especially in the world of movie making with a DSLR. The specs were much better on that than a Rebel in terms of durability and all of that. But at the same time, it was not a top-of-the-line enthusiast or professional camera. It was a solid one. It was a good one. And I was thinking, maybe the RP fits more that model, more that mode. So let's take a look at some of the spec here, what the RP has and what it doesn't have, and try to figure out where this fits in not only with what Canon is doing, but in the whole mirrorless landscape, because almost all of us listening to this show have an interest in mirrorless photography and probably own at least one camera, or if not owning one, thinking about it, and this would be one to consider if you were indeed thinking about your first mirrorless camera. All right, so here we go. Let's get to some of the basic spec here. So we have a 26.2 megapixel full-frame CMOS sensor. You have the Digic 8 processor. So you have 4K and full HD 1080 video. So you've got an electronic viewfinder, you've got a 3-inch vari-angle touch screen LCD, dual pixel CMOS autofocus, and you got 4,779 AF points. That's a lot of points. A nice ISO range from 100 to 40,000. Now it has up to 5 frames per second shooting. So that's both a plus and a negative the way I look at it. I'll get to the negative side here in just a minute. Wi-Fi and Bluetooth connectivity. And it has a few extra features that we've come to expect in mirrorless cameras, and that I'm really happy to see Canon doing with the RP, which is an intervalometer and a 4K video time-lapse. And it also has a silent shutter mode, an electronic shutter. All of that really cool stuff. So when you look at the specifications, you're going, this is very nice. Now, there are a few things that it doesn't have. And, you know, these are mainly based on my observations on what's going on in the market and, you know, what we would maybe hope for, not expect, but maybe hope for in a camera that sells for more than $1,000. So it doesn't have a sensor-based image stabilization. The stabilization all comes optically through the lenses that you have to purchase. And that 5 frames per second continuous shooting, that's only 4 frames per second when you have AF tracking enabled. And you do have a 50 frame limit in RAW format. Now, 50 frame limit isn't terrible in RAW format. I would say, though, that 5 frames per second and that goes down to 4 frames per second, that does feel a little slow. And that does feel a little 5D to me, too. I mean, that was one of the things about the original 5D is that it did not have a fast frame rate at all. Now, the battery is the older battery. It doesn't have the more modern battery that the R has. So it has the LPE17 battery, which only gets you really 250 shots, best case scenario, from a charge. And, you know, it really should be up around 350 or so. So the battery is not ideal in this camera. The lens selection, which I'm really going to talk about here in a second, right now is limited. And there's really only one what I consider affordable lens in the current lineup. I think there are 4 available now and 6 more in the works for 2019. So, you know, the lens situation, really tough, you know, when you're starting out with a new mount. And we're seeing that with this camera, with all the Canon R's. The weather sealing, they're not really clear about weather sealing, but we do know that there aren't really any gaskets, and the weather sealing really comes from the way the parts fit together. You know, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say no weather sealing. However, it might do well in, you know, light mist and so forth due to just good construction. So we'll tackle it that way. It doesn't have a built-in flash. The operating temperature is only down to 32 degrees Fahrenheit or 0 Celsius. You know, because of the lack of weather sealing, and it only goes down to freezing and the slow frame rate, it's not really an outdoorsy kind of camera. You know, it's more for, you know, enthusiasts, you know, weekend trips and, you know, working on their projects, doing portraits, you know, things like that. It's not really an outdoorsman's camera at all. And compared to its bigger brother, it does not have that top LCD screen, which I think top LCD screens, in all honesty, are overrated. I don't have one on my Pentax KP, and I don't miss it at all because the menu on the LCD, the back LCD, is so good. And, you know, and you have like the nice overview screen and all that sort of stuff. So the lack of a top LCD to me isn't a biggie, but I feel like I need to mention it. And the other thing I really feel like I need to mention is that it does not have 2 card slots. Because there was such a brouhaha around that when both Nikon and Canon introduced their, you know, more sophisticated mirrorless full-frame cameras. So this one also does not have 2 card slots. So, you know, when you're looking at the specs of this thing, and if it were the camera only that we had to think about, this is very appealing at $1,300. Very appealing. The problem comes when you have to mount a lens on it. And yes, that is the other part of the equation. So the 24-105, the Canon 24-105 RF lens is roughly around $900 right now. And it weighs 1.5 pounds, which means it weighs more than the camera, than the RP. And it's big. It's a big lens. And I don't even think it's available yet. I think it'll be available very soon. So as I was looking at this very limited lens lineup, the only one that really was exciting to me, and this one is exciting, is the Canon RF 35mm f1.8 IS macro STM lens. And you can get that one for $450 right now. So depending on how you had to shoot right now or how you wanted to shoot with this camera, if you were cool with doing, you know, a 35mm f1.8 on this camera that's, you know, nice and light and not very big, and I'm talking about, you know, the RP, and you put this 35mm on here, so you get the camera for $1,300 and the lens for another $450. Let's say you get an extra battery. So $1,800 investment for a camera and a good lens. And then, of course, knowing that more lenses are coming down the pike, you know, as they say, another half dozen hopefully coming out this year in 2019, you know, then I think that's a pretty interesting proposition. And so I would say that this camera to me is more like a mirrorless 5D in terms of how it gets me excited, what it can do. You know, its strengths and weaknesses. It feels much more like a 5D to me than a Rebel. And I think this is a pretty sophisticated camera. Now, if you have an investment in another camera line already, if you're already shooting Olympus or Fuji or Sony or any of those, it probably doesn't really make a lot of sense to switch over to this unless, and you know, and this is very, very decent reasoning. I'm going to give you a nice rationalization right now. Unless for certain types of assignments, you want a full frame to complement your Micro Four Thirds or your APS-C sensor camera. And in that sense, this camera would make sense because, again, you know, you pick up the body and you pick up the 35mm 1.8 lens and then, you know, maybe pick up another lens later on in the year. Maybe that 24-105, which looks like a nice lens. Now you have a full frame kit. Possibly you sold your full frame kit to buy your mirrorless kit or your DSLR kit anyway to buy your mirrorless kit. And then this could be a modern upgrade to that kit that you sold to get the kit that you have now and to further expand your possibilities. For me, with the work that I'm doing now, I don't see this camera replacing any cameras that I have. I'm using Micro Four Thirds for my event coverage and for my travel photography. And thanks to the Pro Lenses by Olympus in the studio more and more and really happy about it. And then I'm using the APS-C camera, the Pentax KP, for certain types of event photography, especially where I need flash because I just love the flash setup that I have for that camera. It works so well. It has the pop-up flash, which means then I have a command module for my little wireless METS flash. And, you know, it's just dynamite. And I love the METS flash that I have for it. So, I mean, when I need to do event flash photography, the Pentax KP is just fantastic. And sometimes I want to look through an optical viewfinder as well. So for me, if I were to think about a full-frame camera, however, a full-frame mirrorless, jump back into that fray, then I would probably look at this camera. This would probably be the camera that I would consider jumping back into full-frame photography. And I would start out with that 35mm f1.8, and then I would see, you know, what happens down the road. My hope would be that they would have other lenses that were closer to that, you know, the 35mm one, than, you know, the more expensive, bigger ones. But, you know, Canon will get there. It takes time to develop these sort of things. So I'm fascinated by this camera. I think it's great. It's not something I'm going to do this very moment, but I'm definitely going to keep my eye on it. The Portfolio Box tip of the week. This week's tip is how to move images from one gallery to another. If you have photos in one gallery, you don't have to delete them and then re-import them into another gallery if you want to move them. All you have to do is select the images that you wish to transfer and choose the new gallery under the drop-down menu, Move to Gallery. So there's a drop-down menu, Move to Gallery, and you can use that. So you just move them. You don't have to re-upload them. It's very easy. And that way, you know, as you're managing your various galleries, you can easily, you know, say, hey, I want to take a few of these out of here. I want to put them over in this gallery. You know, maybe take a few out of that gallery. You know, do that sort of stuff. It's very easy. Just look for the drop-down menu, Move to Gallery, and you can move them any way that you want. Now, in other Portfolio Box news, we have a winner for our photo challenge up close. And I love the image that won. This is a stunning image of a mushroom. And, you know, a lot of close-up mushroom shots, I won't say that I'm a huge fan of mushroom photography usually, but this one I absolutely love, and it was photographed by Craig Tooley. Craig Tooley is our honored image for the Up Close Photo Challenge. And Craig wrote, it was handheld on a beanbag at 1/8 of a second, and he used one of his favorite lenses, the Olympus 60mm f2.8. He says it's very sharp, it's fast, it's light, and it's just exquisite on the EM1 Mark II. Looking at his shot, I have to agree with him that not only was his gear up to the task, but the way he lit it and the vibrancy of this photo is just absolutely beautiful. I'm going to run it as a separate piece, and so you'll be able to see the shot. And, you know, let's all tip our hat to Craig. And he will be upgraded to a pro membership for his efforts. And nice work, Craig Tooley, and congratulations. Now, to create your own Portfolio Box site, you can use the link in the show notes, or you can click on the tile that's on every page of the Digital Story. Make sure you start out there. Get your free account going. Play around with it. Get to know the tools. See how things look. And then if you decide to upgrade to a pro account, then you'll save 20% off the $83 annual price. So it's already a good deal, and you can save another 20%, but that's only if you go through our link on either the show notes page or the link that's connected to the tile that's on every page of the Digital Story. Portfolio Box is just the best way to present your images online. I cannot tell you what a difference it has made for me. I am getting more work than ever thanks to that link. And if you want to see what my Portfolio Box site looks like, just click on About on thedigitalstory.com and you can take a look at it, because that's where I'm sending folks to see my About page and a couple of portfolio galleries. And a big thanks to them for sponsoring this week's podcast. All right, I have a follow-up to last week's show, that interview with Maggie Hallahan about copyrights for photographers. So after the show aired, I got some mail from listeners, and they're saying, hey, we enjoyed the interview, and it was interesting about the workflow and everything, but I think some of the information needs to be updated, the information that was presented in the podcast. And I want to read two letters in particular, because I thought they were very helpful, and not only helpful for me, but I think they'll be helpful for you as well. So I'm going to share each one now. Now, neither one of these, this is not legal advice. These are photographers who have also delved into this copyright issue, who are doing it, who know about it, and, you know, have done their homework. And, you know, this is, you know, what they've learned through their experience, and they want to share that with, well, originally they wanted to share it with me, and then I asked for their permission to share it with you, because I think this is really important information. We've got to get this right. You know, when we talk about something on the show if it needs to be corrected or updated, then we have to do that. And that's what this is. So the first one is from Scott Davenport. And Scott wrote, caught up on TDS 674 today. Interesting info from Maggie about the business side of her client dealings. With copyright, though, I'm pretty sure the registration of unlimited number of photos is gone as of mid-2018. Whether it is published or unpublished works, a single application is capped at 750 images. It's much more expensive to register all the photos from a given shoot, especially if you're a prolific photographer, such as weddings or events. For my work, I copyright only my published works. There is a provision that, so long as your application is submitted within 90 days of the first publication, you can get full protection under copyright law. It takes an amount of discipline, but it's very doable. To the point that you raised in the podcast about workflow, this might be of interest to your audience. And, you know, both Scott and then I also have Myra sent me a nice note, too. I'm going to read in a second. But the first thing that they pointed out that, you know, is the headline here is that a single application is capped at 750 images now. Okay. 750 is not unlimited. It's not as many as you could fit on a DVD. It's capped at 750. Now, Myra Martinez also wrote me, and she was equally helpful, and I want to read you what she said as well. I just finished listening to your latest podcast, number 674, on copyright. I need to point out some of the points made by your host are no longer current. First of all, unlimited submissions are a thing of the past. Group submissions of unpublished photographs are limited to no more than 750 photos, which is the same thing that Scott was pointing out. Number two, in addition to submitting the digital photos, completing the online submission, preferred method by the Copyright Office, requires a list with title and file name for each photo in the group. Okay, so that also is different than what Maggie was talking about in our interview. Now, I have some resource for you. Again, you know, neither of these folks are dispensing legal advice, but I have a resource for you where you can follow up and sort of, you know, confirm all of this on your own. And the first one is a link provided to me by Myra. She was super helpful. And I have the link in the show notes, and it's from copyright.gov, and it's called the Gruff Transcript. And I checked out this link, and I looked at this, and it's really helpful. It just really gives you a walkthrough on how to do this and, you know, what the rules and regs are. That link is in the show notes. Make sure you check it out. Now, the changes in the number of images per submission were implemented on 2/20/2018. And, you know, then she went on to say, this is Myra still, that more draconian measures were about to be made later in the year, but the public comment period was extended until June 21st, 2018, and then everything stopped. You can read about that in a post on the site, The Copyright Zone, the May 24th, 2018 post. And I have a link to that, and that's both Ed and Jack, and they are great, and they have really good information there. And this is their thing, and they are really on top of it. So a big thanks to both Scott and Myra for their contributions to this conversation, for helping us, you know, get the story straight, which is the most important thing. And as I said, that, you know, a lot of the things that Maggie talked about last week were helpful in terms of workflow and, you know, the importance of copyright, all of that. That was super helpful. But getting into the details, I think that if you're going to pursue this, that you want to take a look at these links that I have in the show notes, and you want to make sure that, you know, you have a clear understanding of what's going on so that when you think your stuff is protected, it really is. And I think I'm going to go back and update the show notes for last week's show as well. Big thanks to everyone who helped. I have a workshops update for you. We've had the registration open now for about a week on the Sonoma Coast Exploration Workshop this coming summer. And it looks like we're going to have one or two seats open. So what I've done is I've gone back to the Nimble Photographer, where we have the reserve list, and I've opened up 2 seats there. So if you're interested in this fantastic workshop that we're going to do based in Bodega Bay, California this summer, this coming July, then go over to the link that's in the show notes, or just go to thenimblephotographer.com and click on workshops, and you'll see that the Sonoma Coast Exploration Workshop now has 2 seats available. Basically, you put down a $100 deposit, and then you're able to register for the event if you wish. And that, by the way, that $100 goes towards your workshop tuition. This is going to be a really cool event. We have this wonderful house in Bodega Bay that overlooks the ocean. It's a fantastic place for us to do our work and have our classroom. Fantastic place to relax and just sit out on the deck and have a refreshment and, you know, watch the ocean. And a fantastic location in terms of all the wonderful sites that we're going to explore for our photography. So again, this is going to be a terrific summer getaway. If you want to join us, go over to thenimblephotographer.com, click on workshops, or go to the show notes and click on the link there. Put down your deposit, and then I'll get back to you and send you a registration form with all the details. By the way, that deposit is refundable, so if you decide that you don't want to attend, you get your full $100 back. No questions asked. All righty? Really excited about this. The more I work on these things, the more excited I get. Joshua Tree and Sonoma Coast, a great 1-2 punch. And then we have Humboldt Redwoods coming up this fall, and there'll be more details on that in the coming weeks. Big thanks to all of our Inner Circle members for supporting this show and for really just being so fun to hang out with on our Patreon site. If you're interested in becoming an Inner Circle member and participating in our photo challenges and the bonus content that we have, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on every page of the digital story. It'll take you over there. You can kind of nose around a bit. And then if you decide that you want to help support the show, you can take care of that right there and become an Inner Circle member. The backbone of our podcast are these folks. And every week I want to thank them because, you know, they are the ones that help keep the lights on here. And speaking of which, also a big thanks to Red River Paper. They are our longest running sponsor on the digital story. They are fantastic people. They're very important to the photography community because they really are passionate about output and printing and making sure that every one of us, you know, has all the tools that we need to make great prints. They have reviews, they have tutorials, they have all the supplies that we need, and they are very nice and they're affordable. What a great combination, right? And they also have a terrific Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. Go over and take a look at the Facebook page. Click on the tile that's on every page of Digital Story. Look at our landing page. Nose around their site. Get excited about printing and make some physical art. You'll feel really good. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. I hit my half an hour mark. Yes, lots to do. I think we got it all done. I have some exciting stuff for you next week. Make sure you come back and join me. Until then, have a great week. Bye-bye now.